Well, thank you. One of the first things that I noticed while in church in India was that they tend to run about 2 or 3 hours. And because I want you to have the best taste of India as you can, I'll be speaking for... I'm just kidding, I won't do that to you. But it's incredible because the kids would just sit and listen. I mean, these are like 5-year-olds are the youngest, and they would sit and listen for 2 or 3 hours. Sometimes they had to get scolded when they fell asleep, but they would still pay attention, be writing notes. It was incredible. So first, I want to give you just a better understanding of where I was and who I was working with. So I went with the Trinity team, the college where I graduated from, and we went to minister to and with IREF. It's short for India Rural Evangelical Fellowship. And if you want to pop on the first picture, it shows, oh, back one. That's my team. But there's a map of India and where we are. It's in southern India, and it's way east. And this is the middle of nowhere in India. So as you can imagine, it's very rural and a lot of villages. And there are absolutely no non-Indian people there. So we stood out a little bit. So we're at IREF, and IREF is run by Dee and Emmanuel Reba, and I got to know them rather well after the 3 weeks of spending time with them. Dee is an incredible woman, and she brought us everywhere. She translated for us during the church services, which was really helpful, and she was just an incredible woman, just in love with the Lord, and it was really great to be able to be beside her and minister with her. So IREF started basically in 1940s by Emmanuel's grandfather. He was a Hindu man who had just a crazy vision from the Lord, and he somehow stumbled upon a Christian conference, and the Lord just captured his heart, and he changed his life over to him. And that's where it started, and I was reading IREF's website, and apparently because of him, there have been at least 10,000 people who have turned their lives over to Christ because of Mr. Reba. I'm not sure of his first name. And so IREF has been brought down generation to generation, and now Emmanuel helps run it. And it started with just a little hut, a little grass hut, and it started with 5 children, and now there are about 5,000 children a part of IREF. It is a school from about kindergarten, first grade, all the way through graduate school, and they also have a technical college and things like that. And so this is what IREF does. They minister to thousands of children, and they also have child development centers. So they have the main compound, and then in various villages in the area, there are CDCs, we call them, where they're after-school programs. And so this is what IREF does, and it was just awesome to be a part of it. And like I said, it's in the middle of nowhere, very few finances, and they're completely faith-based. And I don't just mean that they are founded in the name of Christ, but every single day is entrusted to the Lord because they don't know how they're going to pay for food, how they're going to pay for clothing. I mean, a lot of these kids have maybe 1 or 2 sets of clothes, and that's all they have. And so IREF is completely faith-based, and they just trust that the Lord is going to provide for them in some way. Just to give you a small example, on the compound, for meals, they provide every meal for these kids, and they have 3 meals a day, and every meal has rice, so we ate a lot of rice while in India, but in order to feed all of these kids, they would make 300 pounds of rice per meal. It wasn't every day, it wasn't every week, it was per meal, it was 300 pounds of rice, and so we got to tour the kitchen, and it was just crazy. That's a lot of rice. But they have a lot of kids, so it made sense. So this is IREF. And what we did as a team was we arrived and we just ministered to the kids, which was just really, really incredible. So we spent a lot of our time at IREF on their compound, just hanging out with the kids and playing games and stuff like that. We had Vacation Bible School, which is where and when I took a nice fall. So I guess I'll get that out of the way. I'll just explain what happened. And you can tell I'm moving it quite a bit, which may or may not be a good thing. But so it was our 4th day at IREF. So it was early on in our trip. And I tried to make the story sound a little better because it just makes me sound, it just, yeah. So I was talking with my co-leader and he was like, tell people you were chased by a cheetah. And so imagine a cheetah, which is actually a goose that's really a five-year-old child. That's basically what happened. I was playing Duck Duck Goose with a group of children and I fell. So there was a puddle of slime on the concrete and I didn't see it, so I fell. On my left side, including my cheek, my arm, my hip, and my knee, and I tried to continue playing Duck Duck Goose, but that didn't work very well. So Dee came and took me out, and I had a great opportunity to experience the medical side of India, at least in Repoli, and it was just eye-opening because the x-ray machine that they used, pretty sure it's from around the 1950s. They didn't use any sort of protection of anything, and so I just sat under this sketchy machine in this dark hallway, down this little dingy, it was just weird, so I was a little concerned about that, but it all worked out in the end. So my arm is fine, it apparently has a slight fracture, but the doctor said I gotta keep it moving, otherwise it'll just stiffen up if it's in a cast, so it's really okay. I spent 2 weeks moving it around, so I don't think more time out of a cast is gonna be too bad. So there's the arm story. But that was just a small hindrance to what the Lord was doing in our team and through us, and it was really awesome. So we did VBS, and we also had an opportunity to go into the villages and to tour churches that IREF has planted, as well as child development centers, and do like songs and things like that with them, which was a really cool experience. We were able to see homes. Many families would welcome us in and see their homes, and that was really a neat experience to see how they lived. And apparently, Dee was saying that these villages have been the same way for thousands of years. Like, from biblical times, this is what they looked like, and they still look like that. And so, well, except now they have cell phones and dish. So it was a strange mixture. But to see a grass hut with a dish sitting outside, but it was odd. But it was really incredible to be able to experience all those things. We also were a part of a conference at the tail end of our trip, and that was a really great experience as well. So I guess I'll share a little bit about that too. That was one of my biggest prayer requests because I knew I had to speak at this conference in front of 20,000 people. Fortunately, it wasn't actually 20,000 people. It was only 5,000 people, so that was a relief, I guess. It's just interesting, like, seeing thousands of faces, and now I'm here with 60, so it's a little different. But, so I could share with you about the water buffalo, which I loved, or the cockroaches, or the train experience, or all these different things, but I really want to share with you the nitty-gritties, what we really got into and had to experience, and what our hearts had to go through this experience. So I want to share two of my perspectives that were totally shaken while I was there. The very first was service. So before going to India, I thought I was pretty good at serving people. You know, I could do that. But then I went to India, and I was absolutely blown away. To give you an idea, the first picture that you saw of our team with the lays, that was after we arrived in Repoli. So our bus pulls up, and there's this long street, and I knew right away what was coming because I had heard past stories, but thousands of children were lined up, like 3,000 children were lined up for us, waiting. And then they started lighting fireworks, and it was just like, they were just welcoming us. And they were so excited that we were gonna be there with them. So there were fireworks going off, we're walking down this road, and they're throwing flowers at us, and wanting to get them in our mouths, and it was just, it was crazy. And so all these kids, and they're all like trying to shake our hands and saying, oh, good morning, because this was after a 6-hour train ride and 1-hour bus ride to get to Repoli. And but they were just so excited that we were there with them. So we get through the road with like 1,500 boys. We get these leis on us, which are like 20 pounds. And then we get to the compound where the girls stay, which is where my team stayed. And then there are 1,500 more girls. So we just walked through all these kids, and they were just so excited that we were there. And that was how they greeted us. So that was just like a picture of what our 2 weeks with them was going to be like. And then they like waited on us hand and foot. It was as if we were royalty there to be with them. And it was really difficult because we wanted to serve them. Like, we were there to have them experience the love of Christ through us, and instead it was reversed. And that was probably one of the hardest things for me to go through, because we would try and clear our dishes and we'd get yelled at because the girls wanted to do it. And so it was just a shift in my perspective of serving people. And I was really challenged, like, wow, Kelly, you really don't serve people that well. Because we would be sitting in a room just chatting, and the girls would think to turn on a fan so it wouldn't be so warm. There's just little things like that that just spoke volumes to me. Like, wow, I always had this grumbling attitude when I try to like serve people, which doesn't make sense. And they would just do it. Like, it was just natural. They would let us take the chair, and they would sit on the floor, and they would like clear the road for us, or do all these things for us. And it was just, it was amazing, and really challenged me to look at myself and my heart behind why I do things the way I do. Secondly, I was really challenged spiritually. So we had debriefing time with our team almost every night, and this is something that came up because as I was going to India, I knew we're going to third world country. We're going to see poverty like I've never seen it before. And I knew this. And the thing that struck me the most was how I noticed how wealthy we are materialistically. So we have all this stuff. Like, we are wealthy. We have medical treatment that we take for granted. We have all these things, and here's this country who has nothing. But yet, what I was struck with was, we are so poor spiritually, and they are so rich. And that's what really struck me to the heart, because they know Jesus like I never have. And that was really difficult. So, to give you an example of that, we arrived, I think there's maybe the next picture. Possibly. Next one. Oh, that's right before I fell. So maybe you can't tell from the picture, but these kids are vicious. Duck, duck, goose. The next picture. That's the church, and that's where Repoli is. The next picture is the one I'm looking for. So this is devotion time. This is at night. If you can see, the very back is the stage, and that's our team. And that's about 2,000 kids sitting there listening to us. Now, the thing was, they had devotions every night at 6 o'clock. They had devotions every morning at 6:30. And that was their daily routine. It wasn't like, oh, we'll have a Sabbath on Sunday and not go to devotions. It was, no, absolutely not. They were there twice a day, every day, to spend time with the Lord. And every morning, 6:30, I got woken up by this drum. This drum beating and 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 kids singing. But that shook me a bit too. Like, wow, they spend so much time with God. Like, this is awesome. And then the week of the conference, after devotions, maybe 2 hours after devotions, these girls would come and just pray before the Lord for what would happen at the conference. And I have never seen anyone pray like that before. Like, it was the same at the conference too. Emmanuel would call up whoever wanted to pray, and I would see 6-year-old kids coming to the front, their arms raised and tears streaming down their face, praying to God. And it was just incredible. So this is something that shook me, like, wow, I can learn a lot from these kids and how they know the Lord. And I thought I was here to teach them. So that was challenging. So No, I lost my train of thought. So you guys get the first, my first telling of this story because, I'm still processing. So it's a jumbled mess at this point in my head. But there are two specific stories that I want to share with you. I already started crying, so I'll cry a couple more times in these stories. So going back to the idea of being spiritually poor and then being spiritually rich, and us being materialistically rich and them just being poor. So we went to this one village. We call it the fishing village. I don't even know the real name of the village. They fish there, and so we called it the fishing village. So we went to the fishing village early on in our trip, and this village had nothing. Like, they were really poor, and they had been hit by a typhoon just a few months ago, and so their homes were lost. A lot of just their stuff was gone of what they had. And so we arrive at the church, and again, flowers and lays galore. And so we get there, and they provided a meal for us. And this was like their feast, like the best meal they could prepare for us, they gave us. And it was delicious. It was shrimp and fish. And I realized we were eating first. This team who has, like, when we're home, we have anything we want. You know, we could go to the landing. We could go to McDonald's, like, whatever. You know, we have all these things, and yet they're giving the best that they have for us and not keeping it for themselves. So they fed us, and then they fed themselves. And then we, like, kind of toured some of the homes that they were rebuilding for the people who lost their houses. And we get to this house, and this older couple, I'd say they're in their 70s maybe, they came to us, and they were just so excited. They were like, come to our home. Now, again, it's all in Telugu, so I don't know what they're saying, but they're calling us into their home. Now, their house is two rooms, and it's tiny. Like, one room is probably the size of the sound booth. Like, that's how big it was. And their stove was a fire pit outside their door. So we get inside, and there's, like, the kitchen, which is about that size, and has pots and pans and stuff like that. And the second room is their living room, their bedroom, whatever else room. That's all they have. And so about 15 of us squeeze into their living room. And it was like standing room only. We were tight in this room. And to me at first, my first thought was, oh, how sad, this is all they have. But then they came in and were so happy that we were there. And that this is their home, and we were there. It was just, it blew me away. So I cried even more. So I just realized, like, they were so excited to share their home with us. And it was really devastating for me, because it's like, I have so much, and this family has so little, but they love it, and this is where they live, and have all these white people in it. Like, they were just so excited, and it blew me away. It just, it was in one of those shaking things, you know, I just didn't know what to do with it. And then the older man, he was like, as we were leaving, he was showing me his fishing net. And to me, it was kind of exciting, because my dad's a fisherman, so I'm like, oh, I can relate to this. Like, this is cool. And he was just so excited to show us how much fish he caught. Like, they're all still in the net. They dry out. That's how they prepare them, I guess. They dry them out. But he was just showing me his catch for the day, you know? And it was like, look at what I caught. And it was so beautiful. And I found out on the bus ride back that these families make maybe $1.50 a day. Maybe, if they can find a job. And so it just rocked me. This is my first story. Second story. This has to do with medical treatment in India, just to give you an idea of what it was like there. So thousands of children live on this compound, and it's easy to, when you're on a short-term missions trip, it's easy to go and experience the best that they have, and to go away with this rosy retrospective, like, wow, that was really great, that was a really great trip, like, nothing wrong is happening there, but we didn't get to experience that, which is good. But while we were there, there was also a nurse who was there, also from our area near Chicago, and she decided to do a scabies and lice treatment for these kids, because I would say around 75% of these kids have one or the other, if not both. And scabies, I don't think even really exists in the U.S. anymore. Like, we don't have to deal with it, but these kids do. And so part of our team, we're helping with the scabies treatment and the lice treatment. And this, like, I wasn't a part of it, but the stories just blew me away. So these girls, they pride themselves on their long, beautiful hair. They love their hair. They braid it. They put flowers in it. Like, that is their pride and joy, and it's beautiful. But they had lice, and so they had to cut it off. So there goes their pride and joy, their beautiful hair. So all these girls are crying because they know they have lice. And then they know they have the scabies, and so some of the girls would lie and say they didn't have it when really they did, because they knew how painful the medication was. So the girls on our team were helping with the treatment. And so these girls had to strip, and they were bare naked, and they had to get this painful cream put on them to burn the scabies out of their skin. And they're drying in the sun and, like, in pain. And so we taught the kids some songs during VBS, and these were the VBS girls. And one of the songs goes, "I'm trading my sorrows, I'm trading my shame, I'm laying them down for the joy of the Lord. I'm trading my sickness, I'm trading my pain, I'm laying them down for the joy of the Lord." And these kids, I don't know if they know the words very well, but they started motioning. And they started motioning, and they wanted to sing this song. So a girl on our team was singing this song with these girls who were just in pain and in their vulnerable state, and they're singing, "I'm trading my pain for the joy of the Lord." And that was, wow, we are so spiritually poor. Like, can we sing that? Can we do that like they did? And we don't even have to experience scabies like that. It was just, it was mind-blowing and heart-rocking, and it just changed my life. Like, wow, these kids know the Lord and love Him and want to have joy in Him, even if they're in the worst pain that they know. So those are my two stories. Those were the things that I'm going to hold on to for the rest of my life, because that was something that I never imagined would have happened. So all these things to say, I had a great experience in India. I loved it, and I had a hard time because I don't speak Telugu. That was probably the most difficult part for me, was not speaking the language and being able to talk with these kids and hear their stories, because we don't even know what they've gone through. I mean, some of these kids came out of prostitution. I mean, they're just kids, but that's all they know. And it was just, that was hard, not being able to speak to them. But I was able to learn a few Telugu words, like Tala, which means head. We learned head and shoulders, knees and toes. So, Natala, Bujam, Kalu, Belu. But things like that. And they'd get really excited when you'd learn, like, a few words or whatever. But when you knew their names, that was a big deal. 3,000 kids trying to learn their names. And they'd get really upset if you didn't know their name. Even if they hadn't told you it yet, they'd get really upset. So, but yeah, and then, so I was thinking of doing this, but I'll try it. So one thing that they were very excited that we did as a team was to learn one of their worship songs. So I'll sing it for you, but I might need your help. So this is one of the first songs they sang when we arrived, and it was like one of the best ones because it has English words in it, so I was like, oh, we can sing that. But yeah, so they were really excited. They would always sing it, and they'd watch us whenever they'd sing it, like waiting for us to sing along and move along with them. So one thing about Indian worship, it's very loud, and they clap a lot. So I'll need your help clapping to help ground me out a little bit. So this song is called Nere Rakshana. I don't know what it means. I know some of the words. It talks about repentance and giving up our bad habits for the Lord. So I'll just sing for you, just because I feel like giving you that experience. So and it'll help you understand how difficult of a language Telugu is. So this is how it goes. Okay. Nere Rakshana Anandam Pondani Ye Suprema. Learned, so I just kept repeating that one. It was great. So, so that's just a glimmer of what India was like. Then I debated whether I should do this or not, but I will anyways, just to end. But at the conference, I spoke the very last night, which was, that was hard, because I was waiting for it all weekend, because in India, you never know when you're going to have to do something or what you're going to have to do. So it's like, oh, does anybody have a story to share? Come on up. So that was how it was every service. And so I knew I had to share over the weekend. I just didn't know when. It was very suspenseful. So the very last night, I had an idea of what I wanted to share. I wrote a few things down. And the weekend was, the conference title was Eternal Life. And that's what the weekend was about. And a lot of these kids, they come from Hindu families, they come from Muslim families. Christianity is about 2% of the population in India. And so this is a huge evangelistic conference for these kids. And I knew I wanted to share this story about Sean, and I didn't know how to, or like when you share a testimony, it's like, I want them to have something to take away from it, you know, not just me sharing my story because it's good for me to share it, but I want them to have something to hold on to. And so I'm just gonna give it to you guys at the very end, because the theme was eternal life. And earlier that morning, John Reba, he's the son of Emmanuel and Dee, he shared the story of the rich young ruler who came to Jesus asking, how can he have eternal life? And first, Jesus says to love your neighbor as yourself and to love the Lord your God. And he said, well, I already do that. So Jesus said, okay, give away everything you own and come follow me. And the rich young ruler walked away because he had so much stuff. He didn't know, like, he's like, I can't do that. So he left. And so what I shared was, one of my takeaways, I guess, was how this is the moment that we have right now. This is the moment we have to choose, Lord. If we're going to say yes to him, yes, Lord, I'll come follow you. Or if you say no and walk away. And so that's what I challenged these kids with, these 5,000, however many kids with. Like, when you hear the message of the gospel, this is the one chance you have. Like, take it. Take it now and choose to follow the Lord, because you'll never be the same. I feel like that may have been the chance I missed with my brother. And so I wanted them to know, this is the chance you have. Take it and follow Jesus, because you'll never be the same. So thank you for listening to my jumbled mess. But and thank you so much for your support in allowing me to go, because it's because of the support that you guys raised and your prayer support that allowed me to go and be with the people in India and to experience what I experienced. So I want you to have a taste of it. Like, this is just a small taste of what India was like. So just thank you.